sit down, boys, have I got a treat for you.
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
Welcome to the Digital Soup Podcast, the only podcast that actually fell for the scam and bought Isotoner gloves after seeing Dan Marino talk him up.
Dan Marino was quite the salesman back in the day.
They fit like a glove. You know, they still sell those. Sometimes I'll see them in like the discount bargain bin.
Sure.
Like, oh, I'm tempted. Remember in Ace Ventura, he was really saying how good these were.
Well, and when you look at them too, I mean, they're not even like good looking gloves. They're kind of like old lady looking.
Like driving gloves.
Yeah, yeah. But not even like cool leather, you know, like these look awesome. They're like the little ventilation holes on them, kind of mixed with a crochet. Oh, yeah.
You don't get sweaty cloth. Hands.
So what have you been up to this week?
Oh, man. This week has been the week of unexpected expenses for car repairs.
Oh, no.
Starting with getting a flat tire, even though I knew I needed new tires. So I made an appointment to get new tires. Then I did I got a letter for a recall for my car. It's a Ford Fusion. Yep. That's right, everybody. Can you believe it? Who's Rockefeller over here with the Ford Fusion?
Well, I rival that with my Chevy Cruze.
Oh, man. I don't know. You're doing so well.
Yeah.
Must be these podcasts.
But all that podcast money rolling in.
So there was a recall on an airbag that it could explode in your face and kill you with shards of stuff. So I made an appointment at the local dealership to get that repaired. And they came out and said, okay, we got the repairs done. We also noticed that both of your front springs are broken.
Oh, no.
Okay. And they gave me an estimate. No, the estimate was like $900.
Well, that's not bad. You're talking like shock struts?
Yeah, struts. So
yeah, yeah. That's not bad. A lot of times you walk out of there and they're saying, that's like $2,000.
Well, when you're expecting to pay, you know, I was going to just get tires, which right, are already exactly. Like, you're talking $500-$600 already right
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
All seasons. Now I left with a bill today of getting closer to $2,000 by the time everything was said and done. Yuck. I wasn't happy. Wasn't planning on doing it. And I changed my own brakes.
Sure.
For some reason. So I did all that stuff this weekend. It was just a week of car stuff that nothing techie, nothing fun.
Dang.
So how about yourself?
Well, not much. When you said you had car stuff going on, unexpected expenses, I thought maybe you opted for that new Tesla they were showing with the video games in it and all that.
Well,
that you're going to really tell us a story.
Saving up.
Well, we got another couple months of podcast money before you get there. So
that's true.
Well, yeah, not for me. I don't know. Not a whole ton. I mean, watch some movies, which has been cool. I've been on a kick. My wife and I have been trying to make a point on Saturday evenings. We're so busy during the day. My daughter's in volleyball, so it's just run, run, run. And Saturday evening, it's kind of like, all right, let's get the kids to bed, and we're just going to, you know, kind of veg out on the couch and pick random movies on Netflix to watch. And
sure,
that sounds awesome. Yeah, and it's fun, and, you know, I let her pick most of the time because I know she doesn't love a lot of the same type of stuff I do, but I don't mind, like, you know, romantic comedy stuff like that either. But we watched one. It was called Otherhood. I don't know if you've heard of this. The premise is you've got it's a riff on the term motherhood, but it's three women who all became like super close best friends because they each had a son and the sons were best friends through like school and stuff. Now the sons are all grown off on their own, living in New York City, and they all ignore their moms basically. And so the moms are still really close. They get together on Mother's Day and you find out that the one kid sent a text, the other two couldn't even bother to call or text or nothing. So they decide to go to New York and interject themselves in their son's lives and make them, you know, love their mothers again. And it stars Felicity Huffman, Patricia Arquette, and what's her name? Mm. Angela Bassett.
Pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's not bad. It's got some pretty heartwarming moments. I will say Angela Bassett steals the show. Fantastic still as an actress. And regardless of her whole college scandal stuff, I realize how little I like Felicity Huffman as an actress. She just bothers me. I don't know why. But yeah, it's a college scandal. Decent. Well, yeah, that also, her and Aunt Becky can be cellmates maybe, but yeah, I you know, the movie was good, and she played a character in this one where she's kind of a, you know, kind of the higher classed member of the trio, and it fit her well. Like, she was very snobby and uppity, and everything was about her, and, you know, if nothing else, she did a great job of making me really not like her, which was kind of the point of a lot of her story arc. But it's worth a watch. Yeah. You know, another one of those good, safe kind of, you know, date night type movies. So definitely, nice. Definitely worth watching. So
meanwhile, I'm watching like Legend of the Drunken Master with Jackie Chan on my
nothing.
Gosh,
wrong with
that guy. If have you ever watched Jackie Chan movies?
Oh yeah.
Lots. Oh my gosh. He does all his own stunts. The martial arts choreography is insanely intricate. It's completely different from like the Bruce Lee style, hard hitting stuff. It's
well, his drunken monkey style, whatever they call that. I can't remember. There's an official
drunken
term.
Drunken boxing.
Drunken boxing. That style that he does. I've actually, a friend of mine that I used to be real good friends with was in a band. He's I forget what degree black belt. He's an instructor and everything. Very, very talented up here. And he studied under a guy who taught that style of fighting. And so he
does
learned
he teach
that.
It up there?
He doesn't teach that style. He's the, I forget what the name of his school is, but their school is all about self-defense, but they also believe that you can't teach self-defense if you're not going to teach lethal. So as you get up in the ranks, I mean, they're not teaching it to the students and the young kids, but as they get up into the higher level black belts, they absolutely are learning how to, if need be, kill people with just simple like pinches in, you know, crazy stuff. But I mean, it's
I really question if some of that stuff works.
I'll tell you what, obviously I've never been on the receiving end of any of the lethal stuff, but some of the more toned down versions of it where it'll just paralyze you or, you know, drop you right there, I have firsthand seen it and felt some of that. And it's just simple little things like a touch here, what is he looks like the equivalent of just a little tap there, and boom, you're down on the ground. They learn all about the nervous system and how to hit it and overload it and just shut you down. And so, but I've seen them do some displays of that style and break down like why it's so effective. And it, as weird as it looks in the movies and as fun, it's truly a very effective fighting style. You know, as much as Jackie Chan kind of has fun with it, it's very seriously done.
I think one of the reasons Bruce Lee wasn't super popular in some of the martial arts circles was because he took and stripped away a lot of the movements that didn't do anything. The flair
efficiency
stuff.
Yep.
You know, for in the name of efficiency, which made his fighting style that Jeet Kune Do was.
Yeah.
He just only take the good from everything. He took from Western boxing, he took grappling, he took it from Kung Fu, he took all that stuff and just tried to concentrate it. Kind of the first mixed martial artist, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, just taking from all that stuff. Pretty crazy stuff. But yeah, watching Jackie Chan do his stunts. I always love the B-roll footage at the end during the credits where they're showing the stuff.
Right.
Oh, good stuff. How about you, Jason? Oh, okay. Well, once again, Jason unfortunately couldn't make it today, so it's just going to be Dave and I. Usually Dave, more like consistently always Dave, and typically Adam.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I'm not going to go easy on Jason this time. He's home. We had scheduled to record at 9 o'clock tonight. It is now Central Time. It is now not even just shy of 9 o'clock Central Time, and he just didn't show up. Said he was tired, and we thought he was joking around, and he just never showed up. So hopefully he's alive, and I don't have to feel like a major a-hole or something. But assuming he's alive, he has no mercy from me, because he just no-showed.
No mercy.
That's a big strike.
Mercy is for the weak.
The martial arts up here, I was going to say, I looked it up to see, and I don't know the pronunciations. It looks like Bu Ryu Do, B-U space R-Y-U space D-O.
Ryudo.
Yeah.
Ryudo.
And it's...
I haven't heard of that.
It's a very... Kind of a lot of the similar, like you say with Bruce Lee, where they eliminate a lot of the showmanship. It's not about looking fancy. And it's one of the few martial arts things, at least up here, that I've seen where they don't just blast you through. You know, so many times you get kids involved and they're just cruising through these belts at record speed. Yep. You got like a 14-year-old at a, you know, black belt.
Double, and
like,
you know, well, level 2 black belt.
Right. I mean, this is very much like they studied in Japan. This is an old style from what I understand. And it's very lethal, but it's all about self-defense and extremely good at what they do. But
oh, interesting stuff. And I've been a huge martial arts fan since I was a kid, and I always got into all that stuff. And the only thing at the time available when I was a kid, you know, when we were like age 10 to 20, you know, teenagers up there, was really like Karate North.
Yep.
Remember them up there? They were pretty popular. And there was like range martial arts and Tang Soo Do, Taekwondo, stuff like that.
Yeah. Most of those are still around in some version or another. Mm-hmm. This one, I don't want to misrepresent them. So if you know them or listen to them, don't take this as me speaking for the dojo and the way they operate. This is just me as an outsider, but it's Northern Dragon martial arts. But they, the main guy up here, trained and studied under the main guy that he studied under was, I believe, from somewhere down southern Minnesota, who is actually directly descended from Japan and learned from some of the actual Japanese masters and some pretty hardcore stuff. And but I mean, what is there? I forget how many degrees of black belt there are. Like, 9? Well,
it depends on which art. You know, if there's typically like kung fu stuff, they don't really have black belt. Usually, it's going to be your Japanese or Korean martial arts that have more of that, where it's karate or taekwondo and stuff like that.
Yep.
No, that's interesting. I have not heard of that style.
Oh yeah. There. I mean, he always wanted me to go and join. I was a football player. He's like, come on. And I played in a band with him as well. And he was a teacher at the school when I was graduating. And so he's a little older, but I, you know, so it's not like it was some high school kid teaching this, but he always wanted me to join, but because I was playing in the band with him, a lot of times, you know, he'd kind of just do demonstrations and show stuff. And I picked up a lot of stuff, even without ever actually going to lessons or anything, that I would use a lot of the time in my football, you know, as far as just learning balance and, you know.
Well, martial arts is more, even if you never get into a fight, the classes and the training of it is goes beyond that. There's mental aspect.
There's discipline.
There's strategy. To all of it. And a lot of it, if you look at like Aikido, which is the Steven Seagal style, he made it really popular. But a lot of that is about redirecting energy and stuff like that. Yep. It's not, I mean, you're not going to go get in a huge Aikido fight somewhere.
Right.
You know, but you can take the principles of it and apply it because you're going to have to hit somebody.
Well, so, and that's where I used to use it a lot, like playing football, because you'd learn to read things. Like I was an offensive lineman.
Just flying sidekick somebody in the neck.
No, nothing like that. But it was little.
Bow.
Yeah.
Flag on the play.
Yeah. No, it was little things like I'd line up on the offensive line and I'd look at the defensive tackle across from me. And I could tell by the pressure that, you know, I grew to kind of learn this from watching in the demonstrations and then kind of just putting into practice and observing. Learn things like, okay, by looking at the other guy's hand, I can tell where his balance is distributed and where he's off balance. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, okay, sometimes I want to hit that shoulder or sometimes hit him straight up, straight back, whatever. And you learn to, you know, play that into your strengths, and you could a lot of times just flatten people. I being an interior offensive lineman, you get in those big pileups and you're trying to move people, and your hands are in close, no one can see anything. And I learned a lot of little pressure points that really would work well that no one would notice. And so you'd get in there and a thumb might slide up in the armpit or something. You know, you'd get a finger in where, you know, technically you're not allowed to do that.
Put a hurting on them.
you'd do that. And it was just like picking up a kid and carrying him where you wanted to. Well, and it looked like they were still battling, but they couldn't do nothing.
Even in police training, when I was a reserve deputy, it was dealing with restraining people. They still teach the pressure points everywhere from underneath the jaw to areas along the arm. And the whole point is to try to get compliance out of somebody. It's pretty wild stuff. But the body's made up of nerves, muscles, and all this stuff. There's science to it.
You want to?
I don't believe in chi knockouts and stuff like that. I've never seen that really work for real.
What does that explain?
Oh, no! Like throwing your, like, let's say you're Street Fighter 2 and you're throwing an invisible ball of energy at somebody and knocking someone out. That's pure BS.
You know what though? I've seen some kind of borderline mystical stuff.
Oh yeah,
and martial arts. I've experienced it where the guy I knew real well. He told me at one point, because he was very high level, and it's something they taught higher up on how to redirect your body's energy. Mm-hmm. And we were standing toe to toe, like, you know, arms length apart, and he put his arm straight out, like on my shoulder. So his arm was straight. And he had me, you know, he's like, all right, pull down. So the elbow was bent. So if you pull down, it's going to bend. You know, it's bending that way already.
Right.
And so he's like, all right, put your C, you can pull it. And he goes, okay, now give me a second and keep your hands on my arm, you know, so you can feel this. I was like, all right, what are you talking about? I thought he was full of crap, you know. And he closes his eyes for a second, and he's kind of like in a, not like crazy, like, ooh, meditation, nothing like that, but he centered himself. You could tell. And all of a sudden, it was like feeling, if you grabbed a fire hose that was kind of thin skin and you could feel the water rushing through the hose. You could feel that in his arm. Like, his whole arm just became, like, hot. And, like, I mean, major temperature difference, just, like, hot. And you could feel, like, this pulsing, rushing feeling through his arm. And he said, okay, try and bend it now. And I'll tell you what, I might as well have been grabbing a, you know, 5-inch-around steel pipe. You could not move it. He had his arm on my shoulder, and another guy we were in the band with, he was about 6'4", probably 250 pounds. He came up while the one guy's hand was on my shoulder, his arm was extended. He hung right directly on his elbow, and it did not even flex, not even a bend. It was just solid steel. And then he released it, and when he said, okay, we're good, and you could feel that whole rushing feeling, like,
that's crazy.
His arm went back to normal. I was like, okay, that's some some crazy
that,
stuff.
That kind of reminds me, sometimes if you see any of the documentaries on, like, the Shaolin monks and stuff like that, where they can suddenly do that kind of stuff or take massive hits to the body and full on throat punches without, you know, it's somehow they're controlling, like, themselves through whatever process to, withstand all that stuff. That is wild.
It was
no joke.
Insane, but no joke is right.
I almost walked out. It was so crazy.
Yeah. You see all this now? I promised Twitter. I went and saw this movie also because I saw Jason talking about this over the weekend, and the story went up, and I was seeing it blow up all over the internet. People are angry about this Joker movie, and they're saying it's terrible, and I'll let you kind of explain some of the stuff going on, and I promised I would give my thoughts on the movie, because I did see it on Sunday.
I haven't seen it, but I will accept spoilers. I don't care.
You sure? Well, it's early, so maybe we shouldn't spoil it for anyone else out there. I'll keep it as spoiler-free as I can, because there's still a lot.
That sounds good. So, yep. I didn't see the movie yet, but the news, you know, from around the world here and there, some people are completely terrified by this. It's kind of controversial. People are walking out. Mm-hmm. And the big thing that I'm reading in some of these articles are people are afraid that this is going to inspire a mass shooting.
Yeah.
You know, and inspire violence and stuff because of however it deals with his retribution and his going crazy and killing people and stuff like that, which is, to me, is a fictional story, just like any other movie but is this actually going to be inspiring people to do that?
No.
I would hope not. I would hope people going to the theater aren't suddenly like, I just saw something on a screen. I'm going to do crazy things now.
Right.
You know, just like we watch Lethal Weapon and we don't all become super cops.
We watch John Wick. And we're not, running around. We watch
Rambo.
Our movies
are blanketed in violence and it's, you know, and we eat it up. It's entertaining. It's stuff like that. And the typical person can separate that from reality and go, I am not going to do that crazy stuff. The whole point of it being entertainment is because it's, again, it takes you out of reality and stuff like that. So, there's people complaining about it, saying it was extremely scary walking out, stuff like that. So what's your take?
Let me say this. There's more to what people are complaining about. They are saying this movie is inciting gun violence, glorifying gun violence. So it's like you said,
like every other movie.
Yeah, inviting a mass shooting. Let me dispel that. There are, if I remember right, 5 or 6 deaths by gun in this movie. One brutal death with scissors, and a few others that you know are implied, but you don't necessarily explicitly see. There isn't, by comparison to something like John Wick or Rambo or any countless movies, the body count is relatively low. And mm-hmm. yes, there's gun violence, and some of this movie is very raw and jarring. I'm gonna give it that. Like, there's a scene towards the end of this movie that you see it coming. At least I saw it coming, and I think most people are gonna see it coming. But when it happens, you're like, whoa! They do not pull the camera away. You know, it's kind of like Tarantino sometimes, how he, you know, someone's shocking. Gonna get shot. Yeah, you're gonna see boom, and it happens, and there's blood, and you know, it's very realistic.
It's gory. Looking. Yeah,
yeah, but it's not like Hardcore Henry gory. You know, where it's just like flying blood, you know, like delsing.
Yeah, but that was almost comic book gore.
Right. And so it's not that, but there's people also yeah. saying this movie is racist. It is, of course, you know, they're going to throw what? That on everything. Okay. I mean, all these kinds of things, they're really out to get this movie. Now, here's the thing. I've gone on record here on this show when this movie first was talked about saying, we don't need this. Joker mm-hmm. does not need an origin story. He shouldn't have one, yada, yada, yada. Having seen the movie, it was freaking brilliant. It was
all right.
It was amazing. First
I've heard talk that this is going to be best actor material, well, yeah. Oscar stuff.
First off, the performances, not just by Joaquin Phoenix, which was fantastic, but your co-stars, your cast, Zazie Beetz, who was in Deadpool, and I mean... what's his name? Pacino. Is it Pacino? And that's in this one. I forget. Pacino or who's the other one? De Niro's in this one. Robert De Niro's in this one. His performance, fantastic. The visuals, the cinematography, the soundtrack, beautiful, amazing. Oh, the other thing people are upset about is that it's painting a bad picture of mental illness. And well, yeah, that's the Joker.
What
that's
do you mean?
They're saying that this isn't accurate. And it's making it look like anyone with mental illness is just going to snap and go out and kill people. And it's, you know, again, going after this triggered culture. Now, I'm not dissing anyone who feels that way. What I'm going to say to you, though, is that when you watch this movie, the chances are you're going to look at it and see, more than anything, why we need to just treat each other a little kinder. Because this is the main thrust of this story is that here's a guy who has a mental issue. You find out it might not be the mental issue he thought it was his whole life, but it's a mental issue nonetheless. And that's how they explain his laughter, which you learn. It's not really a spoiler because you learn this in the first couple minutes of the movie. His crazy Joker laugh, it's a mental condition where, and he carries a card around actually to show people because he can't spoiler control alert. It. Yeah. And it, like I said, this is the first like 5 minutes of the movie, so not a big spoiler. But it's because he has this mental condition that I can't remember the name of it, but essentially that his defense mechanism, even if he's like very hurting or scared or depressed, when something like that happens and sets him off, he just starts laughing uncontrollably and he can't stop it when he's scared or nervous, things like that. And so that's where the laugh comes from. And
okay, so this sounds like it's a highly recommended film.
Oh, I really recommend it. And I think, you know, the biggest thing that I'm taking away from it is that a society and the internet as a whole just needs something to be butthurt about. They need something to complain about. And so now they're targeting this movie. And the reality being, I could give you 100 different action movies and horror films and whatnot that are all 10 times worse. Is it terrifying? Not really. It's not like you're watching a horror movie. But what we have to remember is that this is the origin story of one of the biggest psychopathic villains, supervillains in the mm-hmm. DC universe. Of course it's going to be disturbing and dark. He's not out there. The Joker has never been known to be a happy-go-lucky guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So how could people go into it expecting it to have a happy ending or a happy ending, but a positive message?
If the box office says anything about it, it's a very popular movie. I don't think I don't think this is going to harm it. In fact, I think this is going to make people want to see it more, because it actually peaked. Yeah. I didn't care to see it, but now I'm like, oh, really? It's that crazy? I kind of want to see it now.
I'd recommend watching it, and I'll tell you what, I haven't spoiled anything for anyone, yourself included. When you look at this movie, everyone pans DC for being so dark and gritty, and you know, they can't do what Marvel does with the MCU. I don't know if this is going to tie in at all to the new Batman movie that's coming. In fact, I have not even heard any talk that's the case. Everything I knew about this Joker movie was that it was a standalone film, kind of like Suicide Squad, all of that. If that's the case, I'm fine with it. Leave it one and done. It does not even necessarily need a sequel. And I don't know if they're even setting it up for a sequel. It's just telling the Joker's story. That being said, if they do decide to move this into the DC, like some sort of extended universe, they have just done something I don't know that I have ever seen. And it is so extremely brilliant. Think about if the MCU had started out, and instead of focusing on Iron Man and Captain America, you got this buildup of the terrifying Red Skull, of Thanos's origin. You start out building a universe with the villains.
Oh, reverse build.
And there's no feeling of hope. There's a feeling like the world is burning. Nothing can stop these monsters. What an amazing way to set up an entire universe for superheroes where they're not even, the story is about the villains, not even necessarily the heroes to start with. There are some things that are going to happen in this film that you're going to be like, oh man, maybe they're going to do it. You know, you're going to see some good throwbacks to the story.
When's the Flash show up?
he doesn't, but
you didn't see him. He was so fast.
Yeah, he zoomed through the scene. I mean, people were mad because Thomas Wayne and Alfred are in this. You know, Batman's parents and the butler. Everyone's mad, like, oh, they make Thomas Wayne out to be just this, you know, jerk of an a-hole. You know, they make him look like he's the evil guy. But what they're not getting is that this is the story of the villain. You're seeing this through his eyes on why he's snapping, why he's becoming this villain.
So let me ask you this, Dave, since you saw the movie. Now, Heath Ledger did an iconic Joker.
Yeah.
In the Batman, the Dark Knight series.
Mm-hmm.
How does this compare to, you know, his Joker compared to this Joker?
You know, I've been thinking about
really
that.
Not even, is it apples and oranges at this point?
It's kind of apples and oranges, but kind of similar. The main difference, like Heath Ledger's Joker is very much like muscular, physical. He's going to get in the mix, you know. This Joker spends most of this movie getting his butt kicked. You know, he's not this imposing physical figure. He's, you know, basically half starved looking, you know, just really frail, but he mentally snaps and goes to this place and realizes the power he has within him, kind of. It's not a superpower, but they're so different in some respects, so similar in other respects. You know, the idea of the chaos.
Sure.
And unleashing that. Yeah, I'd call it 1A and 1B. They're a dead heat, and this Joaquin Phoenix will give him a run for his money.
Now, I've always liked Joaquin Phoenix as an actor, especially, I think the first thing I saw him in was Gladiator, where he's playing the, you know, he's got some issues in there, too. He just kind of fits these roles pretty well.
Right.
So that's pretty incredible. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
He does an amazing job. And like, it just the storytelling, the look of this thing alone, even if you don't like the story, I recommend watching this just for the visual, like cinematography, for the mood and feel that this filmmaker captures. You know, this is directed by Todd Phillips, who also did The Hangover and a lot of those comedies. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten a lot of flack here recently because he came out and said he's no longer making comedies because in today's culture, you know, you almost, he's afraid to do it because every, you know,
and he's taking Joker. I thought it was a comedy.
Yeah. Well, and there is one joke in here. It's not a spoiler at all, but, Arthur, Joaquin Phoenix's character, the Joker, His name is Arthur Fleck, is his real name, which, you know that right away in the trailers even, I think. And he does a stand-up routine. He's trying to be a stand-up comic. Mm-hmm. And he makes a joke like, my mom always said I was, born to, spread happiness and joy. And, she said, you can't quit school. You've got to get a job or this and that. He says, I don't. I'm doing comedy. Who's laughing now? And the room is just crickets. And it wasn't supposed to be funny, but it just cracked me up so bad. Like, that's actually a perfect joke. Who's laughing now? And nobody's laughing. I loved it. But awesome. Yeah, I don't know. This is going to sound cold, and I don't mean it this way. Had Heath Ledger not died, shortly after his turn as the Joker, I think this version of Joker might surpass it. And I think that Heath Ledger's performance as Joker was epic. I mean, it was amazing. But I think myself included, and for many people, it gets a little bit boosted more when you realize like that was his final role and what he was going through when he shot that role, And it was amazing.
I have a funny story. Well, not a funny story, but it's kind of a sad story and a commentary on... I remember being at a car auto shop for something right when Heath Ledger had, taken his own life.
Yep.
And there was a news story on about it and that he had really gotten into his role and blah, blah, blah. And something happened mentally with him. And,
yep.
He ended up killing himself. There was a guy in the waiting room with me and he goes, and all of a sudden he just goes, he called him the P word.
Oh boy.
And I just kind of looked over at him and goes, all this from acting? Try working a real job for once. He just started mouthing off about how he works all day long, and this guy has like a nothing job. And I was thinking, you have no idea the kind of stresses people go through, man.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I don't care what your job is, and it might seem like fluff. Mm-hmm. Think of a professional athlete. They're making millions. Everything's easy. No, they're working.
Look at the demands that they,
the demand and the pressure of stuff like that. I mean, it's crazy town. And I just felt bad because Heath Ledger was such a good actor.
Oh, yeah. Something just came to me when you said that. The biggest way I can explain, how Heath Ledger's Joker, he was always kind of performing. You know what I mean? Not Heath Ledger, mm-hmm. but the Joker. Like his portrayal of Joker was always kind of on. The world was a stage, but he was going to unleash this chaos, and he was always embodying this, super bold character kind of thing. Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, with the exception of a couple scenes right near the end, he didn't have that kind of a, look at me, he did in a couple scenes, but very much it was watching someone mentally unravel and then kind of snap and realize the chaos that happened because of what he did and then embrace it. And then he kind of steps in the character. And the best way I can explain it as far as comparing one to the other, because this movie is set back in the 70s, mm-hmm. and, obviously Heath Ledger's was set more current day, present day. It's almost as if, and this would actually be a pretty brilliant way to approach this, as if this was the birth of the original Joker, so to speak. This guy, I don't know how he could live long enough to actually be around when Batman comes around and all of that. Because when you look at just the simple timeline math, by the time Batman gets, say he turns into Batman, even when he's like 17, 19, something like that, this guy's going to be mid-40s, maybe 50, 60, who knows? He's getting older. And he's very unhealthy, smokes like a chimney. When he's laughing, a lot of times he just starts coughing, his throat's like, it hurts him and stuff. I could see this Joker, like he gets just brutally beaten. And I could see him just dying. But the chaos that he's inspires a copycat to basically take up the mantle, which then becomes like Heath Ledger's Joker, where he really gets what this Joker was doing and embodies that and carries it forward. And it's like, I don't know, it could be an interesting way to approach it.
I really like how you string these things together, because I never think of these things, and that's fascinating to me. I like that. just the potential of what if.
Yeah.
The new What If podcast with Dave and Adam.
Well, it just, it, when you look at the timelines in this one, I left the theater and I was thinking, yeah, but this is very cool. But if they do bring in Batman, because there are, you know, like I said, Thomas Wayne is alive in this movie. So when Joker is becoming Joker, Batman's parents haven't even died yet. So if you think about, okay, now that's got to happen and this has got to happen and go all the way through this thing until he becomes Batman, by the time the two of them are arch enemies, Joker's going to be an old man. So how can he hold up against a highly trained Batman? You know what I mean? But it really does feel like you could almost see it being a case where this movie sets up the mentality of the Joker, of this, this character. And then someone tied to all of this, or maybe unrelated entirely, which would fit in well with the Joker, not, no one knows his true origin story. Someone that's closer in age to Batman picks up the mantle and just rolls with it.
Or they redo the 80s Batman and it's right after the 70s Joker.
Right. Well, that wouldn't make sense here, but no, when you see the movie, you'll know.
All right. Well, maybe there'll be some redemption.
But beautifully, man, there's some shots in this thing. Like he's in the back of a squad car at one point, and the city is just chaos outside. And the way they filmed it, the use of color, the music, I mean, fantastic soundtrack on this thing.
Sounds like it was very well done.
Oh, it was so good. And just, I mean, it's one of those movies, though. It is unsettling. It's brutal. It's raw, and it is dark. So it's not one like, it's not like Avengers Endgame or Iron Man where I'm like, yeah, I could watch that movie anytime it's on. I'll watch this one again, but it's one that is like a once every couple of year type of watch maybe. You know, initially watch it once or twice, but it's brutal. And so it's not like a repeat viewing, but it is so well done.
So listeners, if you haven't been able to tell, Dave liked the movie.
I do, and I want to tell the rest of the internet that's complaining about it. It's a movie. It's a superhero. It's not some social commentary on whatever your political views are. It has nothing to do with that. It's a movie about Batman's greatest villain. It is a comic book movie. Remember that. Sit back and enjoy the ride. Quit being butthurt over everything. And that is my views. It's not the views of the show, Adam. I'll say that disclaimer. I don't want to put words in your mouth or anyone else. You can email me if you don't like what I said there, but we need email to relax.
Dave. Yeah. Actually, you know what? They should email Jason.
Yeah, since he's not here.
No. Speaking of riding stuff, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yes.
Switching over to gaming.
Yeah.
Coming out November 5th on PC.
Yeah. Now, have you played any of the Red Dead games?
I had it for PS3.
Okay.
And I never completed it because my drive died and my PlayStation stopped working, so I never got to finish it. But do you think they'll also do the original Red Dead Redemption on PC?
I hope so, because I've never played that. It was one that it hit right in that weird spot where I wasn't playing any games at all. And then it always looked so cool, but I never got it. You know, I never picked it up. And this one was a cool game. The system.
Original Red Dead Redemption was open world. You're riding horses, you're shooting old pistols and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I remember I put several hours into it to play it.
So it's
awesome.
Is it like a straight up shooter, or is it more of like a Skyrim in the Old West?
Yeah, RPG, I'd say more like that. It's a Rockstar game. You know, think of like Grand Theft Auto.
Sure.
Stuff like that, where it's open world, but it's third part, you know, like third party view.
A lot of like questing kind of storyline type stuff.
Yep, go do this, go do that.
Sure.
I mean, but I didn't get far enough into it to really get into the story, which supposedly is great.
Right.
And Red Dead Redemption 2 is supposed to be fantastic. So
yeah.
It would be nice if the original one would be on there. But yeah, going back to the old Western times, good stuff.
Well, I would hope if they're going to do the sequel anyways, you would think it wouldn't be hard for them to say, here's the first one as well, in case you want to get caught up on that. Because Rockstar has a pretty good PC presence. I mean, with GTA and all of that. So you would hope that maybe they'd look at it and just say, yeah, we're going to give you the original Red Dead. And then even if they put out the second one here, because that's coming very soon, November 5th. So less than a month away. Mm-hmm. This is one I haven't bought any new games since we bought Fallout 76. Yeah. That was the last game I bought, I think.
Played it many months now.
Left 4 Dead 2. That was the last one I bought.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yep, I picked that up because we all got in and jumped in that night and played. But this is one on the PC along with the upcoming Cyberpunk, 2077 or whatever it is, from the people that made The Witcher 3. That also is one that I'm keeping a close eye on because they're making me want to pick up the games. They look fantastic.
They do look fantastic. So what is up with the Glenlivet whiskey pod?
Did you see these?
No, because the link goes to a page I can't view because I don't have it says page not found.
Oh, the main link is to Instagram. So yeah, that's they have the ad there on the Glenlivet. Now Glenlivet is a very big name, kind of fancy whiskey.
But they have whiskey pods?
Yeah.
Like a Tide pod?
Yeah, exactly. And so the link that says, yes, they are real, is from the fortune.com website saying, yep, those are for real. Basically, what they've done is they've taken their high-end whiskey. I mean, this is expensive, you know, like super fancy whiskey. And they've said, no need for ice, no need for a glass, just pop this in your mouth. And they've got a couple different, what they're calling cocktail capsules, or the capsule collection. And it literally looks...
the future of drinking. You're going to bring your shots in a baggie.
Well, and that's what it looks like, is basically a shot size amount of whiskey or scotch or they've got a couple things. In this dissolvable little plastic bag, I guess it's made out of like seaweed or something.
Well, how does it not dissolve from the alcohol in it, but it will dissolve in your mouth?
You can't store them together. So much like Tide Pods, I guess, I've never used them, but when you get them, you can't stack them together or they will just disintegrate and you'll just have a mess. But they show the people in the ad taking these little pods, like they get set out on their little, you know, like a flight serving tray for a flight of beers or something. And they drop, they kind of scoop out with this fancy scoop thing. They're like, oh, here's your whiskey. And it's this little gelatinous looking pod. And the people are like, look at this. They pick it up and put it in their mouth. And I'm like, that's a lot of whiskey.
Oh, it does jiggle too.
Yeah. And it just like, boom, they pop it in their mouth and ooh, it melts. And oh, they get their blast of whiskey. It's literally, this was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen, but I can't believe they're doing it.
I'll try that.
I would maybe try it, but it seems like when you look at the size of that thing, if you think about a good whiskey, people a lot of times like that.
It's for sipping.
Yep, it's for sipping. That's a full-on shot of whiskey, it looks like. Like, we're talking big, like, well, you took your whole glass and bottomed up.
Apply the concept to the cheaper liquors, the stuff that you want to take shots of.
Give me some wild turkey pods.
I'd rather sip the whiskey, but you know.
Captain Morgan pods.
Yeah, give me a Jack's pod.
Yeah. I mean, just such a weird idea. I guess it's inevitable.
Well, but thank you, technology. I mean, they invested a lot of money in this.
I bet. It's 23
milliliters. We're
going to
make the seaweed extract thing and then blah, blah. I mean, is this a publicity stunt short time or are they actually doing this?
I don't know.
And of course, the comments are like, no way, this is blah, blah, blah. You're reinventing a Jell-O shot. But honestly, it's kind of cool.
Well, yeah.
It's different.
The one comment on this Fortune site is part of the article. It says, last week, Glenlivet dropped a bomb on the high-end drinking community, introducing the Glenlivet Capsule Collection in a tweet, is what they said. It's a 23-milliliter pod that you pop in your mouth to ... enjoy, though it can be a messy experience. I imagine these things break apart when you know, if you touch them or something, and you have a mess all over. But the comment they had in parentheses says, it looks remarkably like a Tide Pod or an oversized suppository. You got a little backed up, shove some whiskey.
I like this comment on Twitter. It says, somebody commented, the Glenlivet capsule for the alcoholic who can no longer drink it fast enough to reach oblivion.
Right? You know, that's the other thought I had. Think about, I mean, whiskey's pretty potent stuff, you know, as we know. I wonder, I mean, granted, this stuff is expensive, so it's not going to hit the the college community, I'm sure, where it's just like binge drinking.
No, that's what I'm saying. The cheaper liqueurs.
Right. But can you imagine how many people die from alcohol poisoning in that scenario where you've got like a $9.99 and you get 40 of these pods? Well, let me just keep popping them like potato chips. And
or
I'm
some
not really drinking.
They decide to throw a Tide Pod in the mix.
Oh,
and then
man.
Somebody really does get it. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
I just think
they look really interesting. And
I would agree. I would probably try one if someone was like, hey, check this out. You know, give it a shot. I don't want to pay for it because it's going to be expensive, I'm sure, because Glenlivet's a spendy whiskey. But at the same time, it's interesting enough, I would try one. What about this comment here from Twitter? This guy's name is at Joe Fattorini. I don't know who it is. He's verified, whoever it is. It says, it's the old kind of nobody, anybody, me, you know, those kind of things. It says, nobody, colon, nothing. Absolutely nobody, colon, no words said. And then, not even some mythical millennial experience seeker demographic invented by vapid marketers, colon, crickets, nothing there. And then Glenlivet says, Glenlivet, here's our whiskey. Here is our whiskey. It's a mouth soluble, in a mouth soluble condom.
Yep.
It's just crazy. Ron Swanson would not approve, I don't think.
No.
He would
probably not.
He would have something to say about this, I think. So
you are destroying whiskey.
Yeah, this goes against everything I believe.
So, two things I hate, government and whiskey in a dissolvable mouth pod.
You know what we should do? It'd be a big commitment, but we should rewatch Parks and Rec. And just because it's each episode on, like, if you watch it on Netflix or Amazon or wherever it is, they're like, what, 18 minutes or 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Quick. Yep. Watch one episode a week. Or even two if you wanted. And then just pull out your favorite Ron Swansonisms from every... Like, do the whole episode summary, but only about what Ron did that was funny. That's going to be my new podcast. My third podcast is Ron Swanson. my three Swanson. Idols. Ron Swanson, Mr. Rogers, and Bob Ross.
I remember when he's in that, like, Whole Foods or something, and they give him, like, veggie bacon, and he puts it in the garbage. He goes, may I please have another one? They hand it
he's
to him.
He's just that throwing one it. Yeah. He's in his office that time, and he's, like, opening drawers, bacon. Opens a safe, more bacon. It's just, like, hidden meat all over the place. Oh,
goodness. Good stuff. Should we talk about a new segment that we are thinking about doing called Memory Minute?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
So Memory Minute, we're going to talk just for a moment about, like, a song, for instance, today from the year we graduated high school.
I mean, for you...
97.
Yeah, 97. I'm looking up mine most. So behind the curtain, as people are wondering here, what happened is that I had thrown these in as kind of backup topics going forward. And this is a segment we've been talking about for a while, but we didn't know what was going
Meredith
on.
Brooks.
is that 97?
1997.
Wow. I remember that
Lord.
Song. I was already
what year did
high
you
school.
Graduate?
96.
Oh, okay. Oh,
a year
you're
ahead
super
of you.
Old.
Yeah.
Mbop came out in 97. Oh, but for me, the number one, my absolute favorite band from 97, Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Life.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That song came out in 97. Love that song. Love that whole album.
Yeah.
Da Dip by Freak Nasty came out in 97.
When I dip, they dip,
you
dip.
You dip. I'll Be Missing You by Sean Combs. Of course, his... I never liked Puff Daddy. He's probably a cool dude, but I mean... His rapping over some of the stuff was just his rapping right. was so monotone, like,
yeah,
and he always had just a straight face. It just, I don't know.
So,
but, yeah,
so you're
Semi
going
Charmed
Semi
Life,
Charmed,
Third Eye yeah. Blind. Yep, that's
great,
my pick.
That's a good album. All right, so here is the top one in the top 100 for 1996. These are not my favorite songs, but number one for 1996. Los Del Rio with the Macarena.
Oh, yeah.
Mariah Carey and Boys to Men with One Sweet Day. Celine
Dion.
That was
a very popular song.
Yeah. Celine Dion, Because You Loved Me.
No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Unbreak My Heart by Tony Braxton.
Oh, yeah.
California Love was that year.
Oh, wow.
That's a big one. Come On, Ride It, The Train. Come on, ride that train.
Ride it.
One of my most least liked songs, because it just annoys me, A Long December by The Counting Crows.
Oh, you don't like that one?
It annoys me. Long December.
I was a huge Counting Crows fan. I still like them.
I like a lot of their music, but that one, much like Collective Soul's Come On and Shine, that one, gets so monotonous to me. One Headlight by the Wallflowers, but back in that day, 1996, I'd be lying if my favorite song of that year was not from Metallica, because that's the year they released the single for Until It Sleeps off of, I believe, Load, was the album there. And Load also had, I believe it was still 96 when it came out, but King Nothing, I believe, came out, in 1996 as well. And King Nothing from Metallica was one of my favorite songs off that album, and probably my favorite song from that year.
Good old Metallica.
Yeah.
I do have to give a special shout out to Virtual Insanity by Jamiroquai in 96. Oh,
you know,
it had cool funk.
And that video.
They're moving the walls on them, and it just looks crazy.
Yeah, I think it wasn't that one of the first times we saw they use like a massive series of treadmill, essentially, like a giant treadmill mat that would change directions on them.
Well, so it's either that or they're removing the walls and stuff.
Yeah, you know, well, because around, when you see how he's dancing, sometimes his feet will go to the side and it'll shift to the other side. Groundbreaking video. That's back when they actually made music videos still.
Yep.
You know what we should do?
See? It was a MTV celebrating 35 years or something like that.
I had posted that.
Oh, that was yours? Oh, yeah. Man, I laughed pretty hard at that one. What did it say? MTV turned 35 years old, so celebrating 15 years of music.
Yeah. Yeah, it popped up. I had posted that last year on that anniversary.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it popped up in like the Facebook memories thing or whatever, and I was like, oh, this is still too good, I gotta share it. But you know, one thing we should do, and this is kind of a ripoff of another podcast, but it's a brilliant idea. If we're gonna do like a memory thing like this, we're gonna talk about music or songs, something like that. What they do on this show, the podcast, I'm gonna shout it out, it's called the Throwback Podcast. And basically they take one album every episode and they break it down track by track through the whole thing. It's a really cool idea. How they get away with playing all that music, I don't know. We're not going to deal with that headache. But what they do is they pick one song off that album, or off, if it's a list of like the top 10 of 1989 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They pick just one song to add to their official Throwback Podcast Spotify playlist. It's actually a pretty good playlist on Spotify. Awesome. But what if we made like an official Digital Soup playlist, and we hit
it? Would be all over the place, because Jason would have like Insane Clown Posse and Bloodhound Gang.
But I think between you and I, our musical tastes are a little different at points, but also very similar in a lot of ways too.
Did Jason graduate?
Oh geez,
because he's what, 80?
Well, he said he's what, 45?
No, I think he's 48.
Is he 48 already? 47.
So, let's just go. Did he graduate in 1988 or 89?
I would guess 88, 89 at the latest, maybe 87. Let's just say 88.
88. Okay. So Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins.
Oh, that.
See, you and I have a groovy kind of love. Tell It to My Heart by Taylor Dane.
Is that, how does that one go? Tell It to My Heart. Dun,
dun, dun, something like that, I think. When It's Love by Van Halen.
Well, he does have Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Nice.
A little
Desire.
Poison.
The Locomotion by Kylie and Minogue. I think we'll say that that's Jason's favorite.
That's Jason's, yeah.
Yep, he's not here to defend himself.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby, do the love motion.
But I don't
Kiss Me Deadly by Lita Ford, that's a rocking tune.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's some pretty good tunes. He's got, for a little hip-hop R&B, he's got My Prerogative by Bobby Brown.
It's my prerogative. And Parents Just Don't Understand by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
God, he's old.
He's so old. So I had to play bass at a wedding a few months back, and one of the songs on the list was Kiss Me Deadly by Lita Ford.
That's a good tune.
I looked at the video. Oh, my gosh.
Whoa, yeah.
She's wearing like a thong in there. In 1988, I'm like, ah. But it's like 80s, not a good look.
Yeah, that was like the leotard thong where it came out. Yeah, but still, she still rocks pretty. I mean, that's
rocking tune. The bass line is killer on that song.
I'm looking at the Billboard year-end Hot 100 chart for 1988. There are some fantastic songs that just the titles are bringing me back to childhood.
80 songs are great.
Yeah, here's your top 10, 20-ish. I'm not going to read them all, but Faith by George Michael. Mm-hmm. Need You Tonight by NXS. Never Gonna Give You Up. Rickrolled that year.
Oh.
Followed by Sweet Child of Mine. Belinda Carlisle with Heaven is a Place on Earth. Tiffany was big then. Could have been if you're into the pop music. So was Debbie Gibson was that year. With she had something else. This Is Love by Whitesnake. Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. I mean, just Simply Irresistible by Robert Palmer. Amazing songs that year. Some of them are kind of cheesy, dumb, but
nice.
But yeah, there's some good stuff. Wow. If he graduated in 88. Bad Medicine by Bon Jovi.
She's got an official website.
Yeah. I tell you what, man. Debbie Gibson, Tiffany, Belinda Carlisle, and even a little bit later, Wilson Phillips. Those were like the girl groups of that day. There was one female singer that was pop music, but kind of darker. Reminded me kind of that Sinead O'Connor kind of vibe, darker, moodier. The song was called Toy Soldiers. The artist was, Martika.
I remember that. I love that song when I was a kid.
Yeah, I did too. And then I didn't realize how dark it was.
Step by step.
It's like drug addicts dying or something crazy. Like,
oh, I didn't know that. I got to listen to that again.
Yeah, you look at the lyrics on it. And it is dark.
Dark.
Very surprisingly so. Here's your lyrics. Step by step, heart to heart, left, right, left, we all fall down like toy soldiers. Wasn't my intention to mislead you. It never should have been this way. What can I say? It's true I did extend the invitation. I never knew how long you'd stay. When you'd hear temptation call, it's your heart that takes the fall. Won't you come out and play with me? Chorus again. Oh, so it's not drug dealers. Maybe it's someone kills himself. I don't know.
Oh. Second verse. Well, it's kind of like, my name is Luca.
Yeah.
It's like a child abuse song.
Right. Here's your second verse. It's getting hard to wake up in the morning. My head is spinning constantly. How can it be? How could I be so blind to this addiction? If I don't stop, the next one's going to be me. Only emptiness remains. It replaces all the pain. Won't you come out and play with me? Another chorus. Only emptiness remains. Replaces all the pain. Won't you come out and play with me? Another chorus. And yeah, we all fall down. The battle wages on, bit by bit, torn apart. It's dark. Like this person succumbed to addiction. But it's like this massive pop song. Crazy.
Wow.
I love like tearing into music too. It's one of those things you're laughing at me about how I make these random connections with movies and stuff.
No, I'm not laughing. I seriously that stuff.
Not making fun of me, but just like, where the heck does this come from? Kind of a thing. It's the same with music. I get into it and I get all excited. Like, look at this. This is amazing. I'm just a big nerd. Awesome. That's all right.
Well, should we do a digital soup oop recommendation.
Digital soup app recommendations.
You got an app?
I've got an app today.
Let's hear it.
Today, my app is Day Count, and it is on the iOS. And what it is for is for counting down to events. So, for instance, when I switched jobs this last year, I counted down the days for my very last day of work, And I had a separate clock in there for counting down to the first day of my new job. And it was kind of awesome because you look at it and just at a glance, like, oh, this is how much time I've got left. So for big events in your life that are coming up or things like that, or if you want to track since you quit smoking or since you quit, you know, eating fatty sugar stuff.
fatty sugar as opposed to lean sugar.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Peanut butter cookies. Stuff yeah, that yeah. I like.
I want to. Is it a countdown or a days since or both?
It can be both.
Okay, that's awesome.
So it was a good app that I used only for the job stuff just because I wanted that constant reminder of how awesome it was going to be.
Right.
You know, to change things up. I was looking for some change and so it was just kind of neat to just track how much time was going to be. So.
Right. I like it. I'm thinking of this because right now, especially I do it just the nature in my, you know, by nature of who I am and in my head, I'm counting down the days till deer season opener.
Oh, there you go. Oh yeah. So you can set up any events, multiple events in there. It's pretty slick. It's free. There is a premium part, but I was like, why?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's day count. We'll put a link in the show notes. How about
you? Very cool. You know, I'm trying to think what I want to go with. I usually go kind of practical. But what do I want? You know, I'm going to go with just a good killing time app and a good kind of research app. If, you know, we talked about gaming earlier and, you know, wondering if you're going to like a game, things like that. Everyone knows about Twitch.
Yep.
I've used their app in the past too. But I'm going to actually recommend the Mixer app.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Mixer, very much the same, similar type of thing as Twitch, only it's tied in with Microsoft, I believe. And just lets you jump in, watch game streams, everything else. But what's cool, it seems like you see it a little bit more with Mixer. I don't know why. But you see a lot of people doing live streams of, like, maybe they're a artist and they're drawing. Or they're digitally, you know, designing or creating. A lot of those kinds of streams, too.
Now that you bring that up, there is a guy. I don't remember his name. He live streams himself pranking scammers.
Now, that's brilliant.
Now, this guy. So he's created programs that make it look like he's entering, like, Apple cards and stuff like that.
Right.
And so what he'll do is he'll be working with somebody on the phone, you know, from another country that's trying to scam him out of money.
Right.
And so one of their scams is, oh, you need to pay us through, you know, buy an Apple or a card, right. You know, like a gift card or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he goes to load it and then he does it wrong. And instead of loading it to their account, he'll load it to his own. And they're like, no. And it's all fake stuff. He's not spending money on it. He just like built these applications to do it. It is brilliant. I got to look that up here.
Yeah.
Mixer.
That sounds fun.
Streamer scam.
Yeah, I mean, in while you're doing that, I mean, streaming, obviously everyone knows about it. It's popular. I'd love to do it. My internet connection will not support it, so I don't. And as little as I game, it's probably lame anyways, but I think it'd be fun, a fun way to just share stuff. But I use it a lot. Like, I don't know if you've ever used Flickr this way back in the day or even Instagram when, say, you're looking at buying a new lens and you want to see kind of some real world examples of what does this lens look like? You know, not the fancy high end review images that you see where it's like super professionally edited and everything else. You want to get some real world examples of what a lens can do. So I'll go to Flickr, search up that lens. You'll find tons of examples, you know, people using that lens and putting it in the groups or whatever. Well, Mixer's a lot like that, where if you've got a game that you want to check out, but you're not sure if you're going to like it, jump in there. Chances are someone's streaming it somewhere or has at some point. You can watch some real world gameplay of it, see what you think, and, you know, kind of get a feel for the game, see if it's something you want to do. So
nice. Well, yeah. Okay, I was wrong. He is on Twitch.
Twitch, okay.
The guy's name is Kit Boga, KITBOGA.
Gotcha.
And he'll you can look up his videos on YouTube if you want a flavor of what he does.
I'll have to check that out. You should throw the link in the show notes for
us. I'll put a link to his YouTube channel here.
Sure.
Let's see, where can I put that here? I'll just put it underneath our whiskey story. Kit Boga.
Yeah, I...
Streamer who pranks scammers. I'll put that in there. You guys can enjoy that one. I'm not going to give it a rate. I don't know the rating. There's probably lots of swears and stuff in there, just so you know. But he gets scammers to just freak out, and it's brilliant.
You know, brilliant. I miss those days, like back in the day when you could do prank calls. I didn't do a lot of them, but I remember many times it'd be me and Jason and his brother Tom.
Yep.
A few of us. You might have been there a time or two, and it'd be late at night. And infomercials would be on, and and we would have fun taking turns trying to create the most asinine, ridiculous prank calls to these places. And Jason's brother was so good. I remember him calling some pillow or mattress company, pretending he was an old man and needs a comfortable mattress for him and his wife, and got kind of graphic with it, and just he kept it going for like 10 minutes or more.
I remember I was there for that one. I remember that one. That was so funny. We were just dying laughing, trying not to make noise.
Yep.
When you could hit like, what was it? There was some code on the phone you could do
Star
to block 69. The caller ID.
Well, that was to, Star 69 star 6-7. Lets you call back,
Star 67, I think it was, right?
I think so, Star 69, I think if someone called you, you could dial that and it would automatically dial them back, if I remember right.
Yep. But you'd still, dial star 67 and then it'll prevent your number from appearing on their caller ID. Right. But that was great. I remember that.
Oh, those were such fun times. Towards the end, though, we had to stop doing it because they started catching on with stuff and threatening legal action. So it's like, we're not going to do that anymore.
You don't want to mess around too much. And that was, of course, late 90s?
Oh, yeah. Late 90s, maybe even early 2000s, but very late.
Before smartphones and stuff, because there's prank apps for phones that are not good, dangerous stuff.
Think about this. Back in those days, even earlier than that, like early to mid 90s, there was do you remember the Jerky Boys?
Yep.
Oh yeah. They built a career on prank phone calls. I mean, we're talking CDs. Or, cassettes at that time, whatever. I mean, tons of albums sold because they recorded and did these prank phone call skits. And they are hilarious still. You could never, ever do that today. It just would not happen. It's crazy.
No. So one of my favorite ones, this guy gets a call from some telemarketer, and all of a sudden it's some comedian that they ended up calling, and he was recording it, and he goes, "Well, this is Detective So-and-so. You just called an active crime scene. Now you need to stay on the line with me. Did you know So-and-so?" And they're like, no, I didn't at all. So he just keeps going, and he's like, we're going to have to, he pretends like he's calling the guy's local police department. The guy's like, what? I don't even know. I'm just calling. Oh, it's great.
So much fun.
It's great. So,
it used to be good. Well, for Jason, we're just going to recommend an app for him as he listens to this editing it, although maybe he won't listen to it because, once again, we did pretty good. He can probably just slap most of this up. But we're going to recommend that he checks out this app called Alarm Clock. So next time we record, he can actually show up to the recording instead of sleeping like an old grandpa at 8:30 at night.
Oh, get him a teddy bear.
The thing is, I'm a little nervous. He still hasn't even replied in any of our stuff. So either he totally just passed out, fell asleep, and blew us off, or else he's like in the hospital or something, in which case I feel bad. Well, I hope you're doing better.
In his exact words, I'm asleep. Night. I think seriously might go to bed. Barely slept last night. Can't keep my eyes open. You guys wouldn't be mad. Works. Tired. I'm old and fat and tired. Fast asleep.
Yeah.
And that was the last we heard of him. Yeah,
and then we're on here. We're like, come on, man. Where are
where's
you?
Where's the link?
Where's the link? We're waiting.
I left my wife, abandoned her at the baseball thing to come back here and record. Where are you? Right. Oh, man. So I'm thinking we should probably hold off on the geek off. We don't want to do that without our third person here. And I think we'll probably put the lid on this.
Yep.
But yeah, we have to give Jason a hard time, and he better do double the show next time.
Yeah. In fact,
I better be careful what I ask for. He better just do the regular amount of show next time.
Yes. Show up. Just show up. Very disappointed.
Step one, be there.
I told Adam as we were starting this recording, I said, I'm sending him a message here. I got to leave him a dad comment. Adam's laughing. I said, we're starting. Disappointed... .. big time. And that's it. Yeah. I don't know where he went, but we can't be having that.
Well, the show must go on.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think we'll probably wrap it up here, guys. I'm so used to saying guys.
Oh, you know what? You touch on Patreon anyways. I don't think we had any new patrons this week, but if you did sign up and we're not shouting you out, just know that we're not ignoring you. It's just that all goes through Jason. That's all Jason's thing. He takes care of
Jason's
it.
Jason's ignoring you, not us.
Yeah, we can't even get into it to see what's going on with it. So really, it's Digital Soup's Patreon. You're tipping the show. You're supporting us in that way. Really, you're supporting Jason through that because he's the one that handles most of the costs of shows, everything else. Yep. But he's also the only one with the login information. So,
and the only one that didn't show up tonight.
Yeah, we're not ignoring you. Just know that he hasn't told us if there's anyone new in there. So
true story. So let him know how you feel on Twitter at our Twitter account or at Jason@DigitalSoupPodcast.com. Yep. Speaking of Digital Soup Podcast, that's where you should go to find out more about our show, catch up on any of our old shows, old articles, anything to do with us. You can find it from that central location, whether it's our social media, places you can subscribe and listen. Everything is linked there. And of course, you can listen to us and subscribe to us over on Popple Appcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. Basically anywhere where you can listen to podcasts. Right. Oh man, I can't even talk anymore. Popple Appcast. You know, Popple.
Weren't those toys from the 80s?
Yeah, I think Popples, they were.
Those little, turned inside out.
And of course, our new Twitter handle, Digital Soupcast. Be sure to say hi in there and go ahead and follow us there. Sometimes you're going to see content that Dave and I didn't approve. That's probably Jason. He's in charge of the Twitter account.
It's no always Jason. To him. We don't log into that either anymore.
And if you do like what you hear, head on over to our Patreon page. And of course, you can leave us a tip if you'd like it. It helps fund the show, helps fund fun things that we can do. And of course, it's helpful to keep our show going. So from all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, to all of you listeners, have yourselves an awesome week. We will catch you next time.
Take care, guys. And later, once I wake up, I'm so tired. Gators.
Hater gators.
It's the Digital Soup Podcast.